home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We've got a great show today. I am always thrilled and excited whenever we're going to have Bob Berg on the show. He's the co-author of the Go Givers book franchise that has sold over a million copies worldwide. We're going to have Bob on in just a couple of moments. But today it's kind of like a double play bonus because we're going to have his co-author John David Mann on in the second half of the show to talk to him for the first time. But just a real quick recap of where we've been and where we're going for the rest of this week. So if you've missed any of the shows, you can catch up easily and take the show on the road, as we say. Monday night, we had Jesse Knight on taking your calls. Monica and Ken from It Matters Radio were my double shot guests on Tuesday's show. They're authors that host their own podcast on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you'd like to check out Ken and Monica's broadcast, go to itmattersradio.com. At the half hour mark, we're going to be playing a little spot for them, as well as we're going to be hearing from our friends at Rainbow Brew. I always love sharing the commercial that Ken and Monica put together because it's actually kind of fun. They put some money into it, and I love production value, so I appreciate that. And Ken and Monica talk about their respective books as successful authors and also their journeys in life. So that was fun to have. We probably could have done about a four-hour show with them because we honestly didn't even really scratch the surface, and I can't wait to have them back on in the new year. Last night we had Rebecca Fisk on taking listener calls, and then tomorrow on the Friday Night Dance Party live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we have Rick Giannatos. He is a music producer and just all-around great guy. He's worked with the likes of the Supremes, a lot of the ladies from like the late 60s, early 70s in that era. And if I listed all of the people that he's worked with, you go like, holy cow. And then it would take an entire hour. So tomorrow, tune in, because Rick's going to talk about his latest project that he's promoting. It's called All American Divas. And a lot of these All American Divas have gone back into the recording studio to re-record and I guess remastered whatever all the technical stuff is that goes on with doing music over. But they've got a brand new project out. It's going to be a CD, a DVD, and then a coffee table book that I think is really cool because it's going to give readers an opportunity to see, you know, where they've been, where they're going to, and also what's happened in between those big moments on the big stage to what's happening in their life now. So that will be tomorrow night on the Friday Night Dance Party with Rick Giannatos. And again, it's the All American Divas episode with Rick. So I hope you tune in for that. You can also follow the show just by clicking the follow button right there on the page, and you'll get a link to all of the live broadcasts that we have going on 5 days a week. And so now, without further ado, I'm going to introduce Bob. Bob is a sought-after speaker at company leadership and sales conferences, sharing the platform with everyone from today's business leaders and broadcast personalities to even a U.S. president. Bob's the author of a number of books on sales, marketing, and influence, with total book sales of well over 1 million copies. His book, The Go-Giver, we're going to talk about that today, which he co-authored with John David Mann, has sold over 500,000 copies in its own right, and it's been translated into 21 languages. It's now being released in a new expanded edition with a foreword by Huffington Post founder and publisher Arianna Huffington. That will be really cool. Bob's an advocate, supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. Here's what I also really love about Bob. He's an unapologetic animal fanatic and serves on the board of trustees of Furry Friends Adoption and Clinic in his town of Jupiter, Florida. Bob, welcome back to Rated G Radio. How have you been?
Garrett, great, thanks. How are you, my brother?
I love your assistant, Shauna, by the way. She is absolutely on top of everything. She rocks the world. But when she got us connected back again, and I said, we get Bob again. And I said, what are we going to talk about? Bob's got an expanded edition of Go-Givers, and I said, we have to have him back. So I got goosebumps just even saying that right now. So,
thank you.
What's been going on in your world?
Oh, man, all good stuff. Or actually, a lot of the same stuff, but the same stuff is good stuff. So when people say, you know, what have you anything new happening? I said, no, everything's pretty much the same, only more so. And I kind of like it like that. So it works for me.
There you, well, you've been busy because you've now kind of turned this Go Givers into a franchise of books and different topics. You've got a couple of different versions, one that's currently out, one that's coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going to be on the horizon for you?
Yeah, well, with the new one, and it actually did just come out, and that was what we did with this. It's a parable, so the story stays the same, of course. But the publisher asked John David Mann, my co-author, and I to my co-author and me. I don't know why I do that, but asked us to if we'd like to expand it somehow because it had just hit the 500,000 mark in sales, and to celebrate, is there a way we could maybe add some additional value to the book? And we thought, well, we can't really change the story itself, of course, but we could do some things afterwards that might be helpful. So we put a Q&A section in the back based on the questions that were often asked, the frequently asked questions, I guess. But also because a lot of businesses and religious institutions and book clubs and schools and so forth use the book where everyone, you know, has a copy and they do discussions on it, we thought, let's put together a discussion guide. So we could actually lead the discussion in a sense. And so we put a discussion guide in there, which you know, we're very excited about. And the super entrepreneur and super nice person, Arianna Huffington, was kind enough to write a foreword for it. So that's our expanded edition. So we're very excited about it and, you know, looking forward to it.
Well, I think that anybody who has read the Go Giver before and has been touched by the story, I think, you know, they will really appreciate the updated variety. And, of course, it's out right before the holidays, which is always a good thing.
Yeah. So we'd love to see people do their one-stop shopping, right, and get a bunch of books for their friends. So,
I think,
you know, we'll see what happens with that.
Well, I think it's always a good idea to buy 10 books. You can keep one for yourself and then give 9 away as gifts. So anybody,
exactly.
You know, honestly, when my friend Dave Klatch said, have you read The Go-Giver? And this goes back, you know, ages before you and I got connected. I said, no, what's this book, The Go-Giver? And he says, Garrett, you need to read it. It's going to change your life. And I said, a book that's going to change my life? Yeah, right. And I went and bought the book, and I sat down and I read it. There were moments in the book I was crying. There was moments in the books I was laughing. And at the end of it, I felt like I went on this roller coaster journey that just made me want to be a better person in life. And I was so touched by it. I really did not expect that from what I would say is a quote unquote business book, because you know they're all dry and boring. And this was, you know, I say life changing, and that sounds kind of silly to say, but it really, you know, impacts people's lives in major, major ways.
Well, I appreciate that. I had the honor of working with John David Mann, who is a fantastic storyteller. And, you know, I'm kind of a how-to, step one, step two, step three. And John is just such a magnificent writer. So it was a good collaboration. But, you know, in terms of it, you know, changing. I mean, you know, you were a go-giver long before you ever read the book. I think with you, it's more that it probably was very congruent with the way you already did things, and so you recognized something in there. And we found that to be the case with the first group of people who were sort of the early adopters of the book. They were already like you. They were already successful people. They were already people with a good heart. They were already people who enjoyed the idea of adding value to the lives of others. And so it was almost something where it was, yeah, well, okay, this is a confirmation of this, of what I'm doing, and so forth. And then I think from there, they began, you know, giving out a lot of books or telling people about it like your friend did, and as I know you have, and so forth. And so I think it's gone like that. But but certainly, please understand, when you say something like that, I take that as a great compliment.
Well, okay, I'll give you that. But you know, maybe there were things that I was doing or was part of my experience before reading the book. But I think sometimes you need to see things in order to really remember. Oh yeah. So there were a lot of light bulbs that went off in my head that I frankly was kind of surprised at when reading your book.
Wow.
And I think sometimes, you know, you get a message when you're supposed to get the message. And I think that's what happened. And I'm going to,
well, thank you
know,
you.
knowing that you're here, and I usually, and I'm going to tell you, this is just how it works with the show nowadays. I never start reading the book that the author's, you know, promoting until like the night before the show, because otherwise I'd be reading 20 books at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I've got your mm-hmm. Go Givers Sell More book, which I'm now in chapter 14. Didn't get quite as far along as I'd wanted, but I think I needed to read this book this week, and I think it's been very fortuitous that you're on the show today, because the lessons that I'm relearning here are lessons that I've been needing to be reminded of. So I think that's all,
wow.
you know, everything kind of happens for a reason, so I really
mm-hmm.
thank you for that.
Well,
so
thank you.
When we dive into the Go-Giver book here, you have five laws that you and John share in the book. Can you talk about those a little bit and how you decided that those were the five that needed to be on the paper?
Sure, and it's all really based on an overlying premise, if you will, that shifting one's focus, and that's really, I think, the key, shifting one's focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, and we've talked about this on your show before, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others. That's really what we mean by giving in this case. Always looking for ways you can add value to the lives of others. Sometimes it's directly through your product or service. More often than not, it's through other more indirect ways. But whatever it happens to be, it's finding ways to make another person's life better, more fulfilling, happier, you know, whatever it happens to be. And we do this in conjunction, if you will, with five laws, the five laws of stratospheric success, as we call them, which are the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity. And I can give a Reader's Digest thumbnail sketch.
Sure,
that would be helpful.
I think so, you know, because again, a lot of these things people have heard of before, and they're like, well, of course, I know what value is, and I know what authentic.
Sure.
But I think the way that you describe them really puts them in a special spotlight that will have people going, oh, okay, I need to rethink
cool.
about this, and I need to go read the Go-Givers.
Okay, let's go through them. The law of value says your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, again, these laws tend to be kind of counterintuitive, so when you first hear them, they don't quite sound right. Give more in value than I take in payment? How am I supposed to stay in business this way? You know, sounds like a recipe for bankruptcy. So to understand this, we simply need to understand the difference between price and value. Price is a dollar amount. It's a dollar figure. It's finite. I guess you could say it is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of something to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, what have you, that brings so much worth or value to it that someone will willingly exchange their money or their time or their energy and what have you for it and be ecstatic, be glad they did, while you make a very healthy profit. In the book, we use a restaurant or Iafrate's Italian Cafe. And it's a high-end restaurant in a swanky part of the city, as Joe described it. And, you know, you go in there, you have a meal, and you pay a lot of money for it. You probably pay $150 for a couple hundred bucks for a meal. And that's the price, but the value you receive in exchange is so much more than that. Mm-hmm. Aside from the food just being fantastic, the atmosphere is awesome. The way you're greeted and made to feel so special, and the waiter or waitress who's been trained and taught to know when to pay attention and when to kind of let you go and enjoy your meal, and everything together just combines to give you, you know, you may have paid a couple hundred dollars for the meal, but you come away from it feeling like $1 million. So
right.
You receive more in value than you took in it, than what you paid. But now the Iafrate, a restaurant owner, obviously the food costs much less than what he's charging for it. He has other costs in terms of the equipment and so forth, and his team, his staff, obviously costs much less than what he charges. So he makes a very, very healthy profit. So he gave you more in value than he took in payment while also making a very healthy profit. And what's interesting is the main characteristic of a true free market based exchange, where no one is forced to do business with anyone else, is that both parties come away from the experience better off than they were before it.
And a lot of people will call that like a win-win, but is that really, is that a fair?
Well, it is. And it's funny because in the book, one of the mentors tells Joe, you know, forget about win-win, make your win about the other person's win.
Right.
But it's really not that we're saying don't have win-win. Win-win is great. But what we were saying in that case is sometimes people say win-win, but what they really mean is, okay, I'll do a little bit for this person, but I want to make sure I don't lose. You know what I'm saying? It's more of a defensive type of thing than it is a true win-win. So yes, in any transaction like this, both parties should feel so good about it, you know, that it really what happens is when we live on the creative rather than the competitive plane, we're able to build a bigger pie for everyone as opposed to having to get a bigger pie by taking some of someone else's away. And I think that's the key.
Well, and you know, I think the lesson that is really important for me here, because you know, in my career in sales, I've gone to sales training, I've done all of these things, and you know, a lot of the things that you talk about in the Go Giver and also Go Giver Sell More is, you know, the traditional mindset of, you know, the things that you need to do in sales to be successful: work hard, make more phone calls, and all of that. But at the end of the day, you know, you talk about the value proposition that you bring is, you know, quit thinking about yourself when you have that 200-pound telephone. You know, you're thinking about me. If you just think about the value and helping other people, you know, that 200-pound telephone suddenly goes away, or the value that, you know, because it's removing that, and it becomes so much easier to help other folks, and then, you know, you become successful as a result.
That's so important. You bring up a great point because, you know, when you're on the phone, the question is, okay, am I thinking about myself, about making the sale, about, you know, which puts pressure on you, by the way. It's uncomfortable. It's why we don't like making phone calls, right? Because, you know, we know somebody else, the person on the phone, probably doesn't appreciate that. On the other hand, when we can go into whether we're knocking on a door or calling on a phone thinking, well, you know I have something fantastic here of great value. Is this person the one who needs it or wants it? And then it's about them, not about us. And we can approach it that way. And if they're interested, great. If they're
great,
not, that's okay as well.
Well, you know, and the thing that I really like about your messages is, like, you know, you're not really out there to sell people. You're out there to provide value and help other people. And the fact that, you know, you might not, quote unquote, make that sale to the one person doesn't mean that, you know, that other person that you've provided value to isn't going to say, you know what, Bob walks on water. He wrote these great stories, and did you know, and the next thing you know, everybody's referring other people to you for business, but you didn't make that one sale with that one customer, but they become your referral base. So it's just, it's that whole mindset is such a shift for, I think, how a lot of people think. And I needed that reminder this week, by the way, Bob. So again, it's important that you're here. But it's such a different way of thinking about things that I think a lot of folks who are quote unquote salespeople really get off track. And then you also bring up the fact that, you know, for folks who aren't quote unquote salespeople, the values that you are talking about in GoGiver is, you know, is across the board available for everybody.
Right.
I think there was a quote that you had mentioned that, you know, you gave a copy of the book to somebody, and, you know, they made it required reading for their 13-year-old, whether or not they ever had a career in sales ever, because the lessons just translated across the board.
Yeah, we love hearing when people say that they've given it to their kids or they've had family discussions about it and so forth. I mean, what a fantastic compliment that is. And yeah, you know, any principle that works in one area of life typically transfers across all areas, whether it's financial, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, relational, or what have you, because universal laws are universal laws. And they typically apply to everything.
So one of the stories or the concept in the book, The Go-Giver, is that, you know, Joe ends up having all of these great mentors. And, you know, I always think, you know, maybe I misread it, but I think Joe's a little slow to the party sometimes about, you know, what's really going on. But that's part of the, you know, the charm of the story, because that way you learn the lesson with Joe along the way. But what is the value of mentoring meant in your life?
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate in that regard, both in terms of lifetime mentors and sometime mentors. I grew up with two wonderful parents, and who's just set a great example. I mean, they are to me the ultimate go-givers, and that wasn't a word that was used or that was, you know, consciousness or anything. But I watched them just look to add value to others, to be of value to others. You know, I've always said about my dad that he has the greatest people skills of anyone I've ever seen. And he was very, you know, grew up very, very poor, very self-educated and so forth. But, you know, when we think of people skills, which are so important, and being able to watch him and see the people skills, and yet it all comes down to something that I believe, and that is the single greatest people skill is a highly developed and authentic interest in the other person. And that's what I always saw in him. In my mom, too. But my dad's more like, with both of us, we're more in the public light. He was more in the public. And so, you know, he dealt with people on an everyday basis. And I was able to model that. And I saw that he was always so genuinely interested in that other person and in bringing out the best in them. And to me, you know, that kind of mentorship is, you know, I still find myself you know, whenever I'm in a situation or a challenge, you know, I'm always asking, okay, how would Dad handle this? You know, what would he say in this case and so forth? So that, to me, that's lifetime mentorship, and that's meant a whole lot. So I was definitely blessed with great parents. And it seemed like whenever, you know, when I first got in sales, one of the first sales managers I had happened to be a real student of sales and a really nice, caring person. And he kind of took me under his wing, and he taught me. But, you know, look, can I share one, what we call a drive-by mentoring moment?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And, well, you know, I have a great friend. Her name is Dondi Scumaci. She teaches leadership and
I love her
team
name.
Building for some of the biggest companies in the world. And she's one of my mentors. And she and I have a term called a drive-by mentor. And a drive-by mentor is someone who you may never have met before, or maybe met once or twice, but never really even had any kind of relationship with. But they said something to you at the very time you needed to hear it, and you happened to be open to the idea. And something like this occurred with me when I was sort of new in sales, but I had really just started to now establish myself and start to get kind of good at it. And I was doing well, but I was still, you know, kind of focused on the sales part itself. And I think this guy saw me. I think he was like a retiring engineer. I don't even know his name, but like a retiring engineer with the company I was with. I think I may have seen him once and maybe one other time, and that was it. And I think he saw me as sort of a Joe in the story, as a guy who had potential, but it was a little slow to the game and really getting the important part, and that I needed that shift in focus, in a sense. And he said to me, "Berg, if you want to make a lot of money in business, if you want to make a lot of money in sales," he said, "don't have making money as your target. The target is serving others. Now, when you hit the target," he continued, "you'll get a reward. The reward will be money, and you can do with that money whatever you want. But never forget that the money is only the reward for hitting the target. It's not the target itself. Your target is serving others."
I love that story.
Wow.
And that's so true.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah, and so that was, you know, to me, that's a mentor, right? Yeah, I mean, not mentor in what we think of the sense of the word, as someone who, you know, ongoing is sharing their wisdom, but
right.
So, but he's just one kind of mentor. So there are the lifetime mentors, there are the sometimes mentors, and there are even the drive-by mentors.
I love the drive-by mentors. That's great. So, when people are – a mentor, whether they're a drive-by lifetime, whatever the case may be, you know, somebody who is benefiting from that, what do you think, is there a value that mentee is providing to the mentor?
Well, you know, on sort of an intrinsic level, I think many mentors enjoy mentoring because many mentors are successful people, and one reason they're successful is because they're giving people. They like giving value to others, and they like seeing someone else be able to learn from their experience. I think the key is for that protege or mentee, I think the key is for them to look for ways to give value to the mentor, even though obviously they can't to the same extent. But what they can do is, you know, from the very time they approach this person, is to let this person know that they will, you know, only they will ask them, you know, specific questions that, and to do the, your research on this mentor, so you don't have to ask things that you should already know. So you're respectful of his or her time. It's sending a personalized handwritten thank you note to this mentor after they have coffee with you or whatever it was, or give you some kind of advice, and letting them know that you're anxious to put into practice what they were saying and thank you for sharing your wisdom. It might be that you make a, you know, you, it's easy to find out what someone's causes are or charities, so you find out what that is. Maybe you make a small donation to their favorite charity in their name, which will get back to them. So again, you're doing it not as a show-offy thing, but so that they know that you're valuing their time and expertise, and that you are wanting to give to them in some way. You know, it might be that you know that they have a certain interest in something, and you happen to know someone who specializes in that or whatever, and you make that connection. So I think whatever you can do as a protege to show respect to that mentor and let them know that your desire is to add value to their lives, I think that's always a positive.
I love it. I love it. Bob, we've got about a minute or two left before I know you have to run off to other wild things that are going on in your world to support the Go-Giver and your new expanded edition. Do you have any words of advice for budding creatives that are out there that either might want to be an author or, you know, maybe a mentor in life?
Well, you know, for someone who wants to be an author, and I'm often asked this, you know, there's a system to doing it, to finding the right publisher and deciding if you want to publish it through a major house. Do you want to self-publish or publish on demand or go through kind of a hybrid? What about getting an agent? How important is that? And that's very important if you want to go through a major house. What I did is I interviewed, you know, John David Manson, my agent, for the Go-Giver series. Margaret McBride is one of the biggest in the. She lives near you, actually, because you're in Southern California. She's in Lloyd.
Down the street.
Yeah, and so Margaret McBride, who represented Ken Blanchard and a whole bunch of people, but so I did an interview with her that I have people that I suggest people listen to, because she talks about finding an agent, and if anyone would like to, they can listen to it at burg.com/agent. It's for free. They can just, you know, in the middle of the thing, they can click on it and it will come right back to them. Just put in your email address, whatever. And she gives you the whole thing on the benefits of an agent, how to find an agent, the things you can do and not do. But it goes back to really understanding that there's typically a system for doing whatever you want to do. And I define a system as simply the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles. The key is predictability. If it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired results of B, then you need to just keep doing A until you get those desired results. So I would say find a way, you know, find mentors like yourself, right, who can help you do those things. And just, you know, look to add value to the lives of others and be receptive when others want to add value to your life.
We could spend another whole hour on being receptive to that. So as we wrap it up, Bob, where do you prefer people go buy The Go-Giver?
They can either get it at Amazon.com or their local bookstore, but if they come to burg.com, B-U-R-G.com, everything's pretty much there. They can subscribe to my Influence and Success Insights if they'd like at chapter one of the book, connect with me on social media, blog, blah, 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 the whole thing. So it's all pretty much there at burg.com.
Right on. Well, everybody, it's been Mr. Bob Burg. We're going to take a short commercial break and then come back with John David Mann, Bob's co-author of the Go-Giver series. So we'll be right back after this. And stay tuned for a quick note from It Matters Radio.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Aye, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a duff man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Well, why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful if I have a hard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
Welcome back to the second half of the show. We had Bob Berg, the co-author of The Go-Giver, on in the first half. I feel like I've won the lottery today because in the second half of the show, we've got Bob's co-author, John David Mann. And so here's his introduction, and I wish we had about 17 hours. We may just have to have John back for a future episode where we just get him exclusively for a whole bunch of time if he has time to do that. But John David Mann is going to be our guest next. He's been writing about business, leadership, and the laws of success for more than 30 years. As an entrepreneur from the very beginning, he formed a high school with other students that he was going to school with to create a very successful high school. I need to know about this. And after establishing himself as a concert cellist and prize-winning composer, he built a multi-million dollar sales organization of more than 100,000 people before turning to writing and publishing. So he's written the Go-Giver, co-authored the Go-Giver books with Bob, of course, but he's also co-authored the New York Times bestsellers Flash Foresight, The Red Circle, the national bestseller Among Heroes, and his Take the Lead book was named by Tom Peters and the Washington Post as the best leadership book of 2011. It's my distinct pleasure and honor to welcome John David Mann to the show. John, thank you for being here today.
Hello there.
Oh, my gosh.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I need to know all about you, and this is our first time having a chance to, I think, you know, chit-chat a little bit. So, Shauna, thank you very much for making this happen. But, you know, John, tell me a little bit about your story. How do you go from, you know, this high school whiz kid to a concert cellist to everything else that is in between here?
None of it was intentional. It wasn't my fault, I promise. I never set out, you know, most of the careers that I've stumbled into weren't where I was headed. Life is kind of what has happened to me while I was making other plans.
Sure.
So the high school, where that came from, I was 17 years old. I was going to a public high school. I had a bunch of friends who we were going to a scattering of towns of, you know, probably 30, 40, 50 miles radius. So we were probably going to two dozen different high schools. We just all knew each other from childhood. And schools, they weren't terrible. They weren't violent. We weren't in danger for our lives, but we were bored. We weren't learning that much. And we were sitting around one Saturday and said, you know, wouldn't it be cool? What would it be like? What if we had a school where we could just study whatever we wanted and learn as much as we wanted?
Oh, man.
Very fortunately, a few of us had parents who, instead of saying, you know, make sure you quit with your stuff and go back to your homework and whatever, we had parents mm-hmm. who encouraged us and said, you know, keep talking. And we did, and we decided to take that seriously. We started sketching out ideas for what would that school look like. We eventually came to a point where we realized we needed a grown-up to help us because we knew that at some point we were going to need money to rent a building, to buy books, to do stuff. Stuff takes money. We knew this. And so we began interviewing for the post. We interviewed probably a half dozen different adults for the position of director of our school, which A, didn't exist, and B, was offering a salary of zero. And we got the most fascinating people to apply for the UN job. And we eventually hired, in quotes, a guy named Julian F. Thompson, who has since gone on to be a very distinguished young adult author. He writes great stuff, hilarious, wonderful, poignant stuff. Julian came and joined us, spent the next half year living at one of our houses, fundraising and brainstorming with us and just being his amazing self. And the following year, we opened our doors. I was in its first class. We had 45 kids, about 50 different courses. It was everything from macrame and cooking to computer programming to ancient Greek to you name it, astronomy, physics. We had everything. If a kid wanted to learn it, we found someone to teach it. We had a core staff of three whom we paid, who lived at the school, and then we had a volunteer teaching cadre, mostly parents, friends of parents, friends in the community, and so forth. So it was cool. And I went there for a year, graduated, went back the following year on the faculty, and taught there for a couple of years, and then moved on to do the rest of the stuff.
You know, as one does. Oh, my God. So, okay, your high school almost sounds like it's a community college. It's prep for community college or something, because it sounds like you have the core stuff, but then you have all these other fun classes that you can take that really are kind of outside of the quote-unquote norm that you might see in a traditional education setup.
Yes.
I love it.
And it was actually no core curriculum in the sense that there were no required classes, and that was the alternative school aspect of it. But what we found was when there were zero requirements, you know, nobody came to that school unless they wanted to learn. So, you know, we had kids learning stuff and doing exciting things. We had students who went on to Yale, Harvard, Princeton, state schools, you know, everywhere. Yeah, it worked out really well.
Well, I'm going to fast forward just a tiny little bit because we're only going to have about 20 minutes, and we could just talk. I would talk all day about that because I'm fascinated by that here, John. But have you always been a good storyteller, or where did your love of storytelling come about from?
I think the biggest influence for me is I started out in life as a musician, as a concert cellist and composer. And I like to say I write with my ear. I mean, I studied music, classical music, enormously, and learning how great, you know, large structures of symphonies and things are created, and how a person weaves a web that holds you spellbound for 45 minutes. And so I never really studied writing per se. I never set out to be a writer. All through these other different careers I was doing, there was always stuff that somebody had written that was good ideas but not said that well, and I was the guy that it almost seemed to get kicked over to me to edit. My mother was a teacher. My dad was a professor. He was a choral conductor but also a musicologist and a professor. So I kind of come from a family where editing, writing, teaching was the norm. And then, you know, eventually this is the story with Bob Burke and how The Go-Giver happened. As I say, other plans. I was planning at that time to be a Hollywood screenwriter. I was studying screenwriting in Hollywood. That was my career path. I was going to go do that. And my pesky friend Bob Burke asked me if I would write this book with him. And I didn't really see it. I wasn't sure it was going to really work. I didn't really have time. But it was Bob. And so, you know, I love Bob. So I thought, well, if Bob says it, I should at least do him the honor of entertaining the thought. So I went and visited him for a day. We sat down and brainstormed. And then when I had a break in my calendar the following February, I sat down and sort of started thinking about, I think it was the Deborah Davenport scene. I started kind of playing with that, drafting that. And I was hooked with the story. And boom, I think it took us about 6 weeks to knock that puppy out. And there you go. And it was, by the way, turned down 22 times by publishers before the 23rd.
Really?
Said,
I am stunned.
Yep. In fact, the first time we took it out, I think it went to about maybe 12, 13, 14 publishers, all rejections, many of them with positive comments, like, we enjoyed this story, but it's not really for us, or we think this is interesting, but I don't know if it'll really sell, blah, blah, blah. Our agent kicked it back to us, and someday I want to publish the original manuscript with the massive red markings that cover every page, because we really revised it a lot. I am a big fan of rewriting, and we could spend an hour talking about writing and rewriting. But 9 months later, we took it back to New York, and it got rejected a whole bunch again. And finally, this wonderful man named Adrian Zakheim said, you know, we'll do that. And they did. And here we are.
So, well, and I want to talk about the Go-Giver from a story perspective, because Bob just got through giving you huge props about saying, you know, John is a great storyteller, and, you know, that's what I love about this book. From the first page to the last page, you know, it sounds trite to say, but it's true. I mean, I laughed, I cried, you know, I was immediately invested into Joe and what was going to happen. I was wondering, like, Joe, you know, can't you see, you know, it's like in the horror films, don't go up the stairs, but it's like, Joe, you know, don't you see what's... This is a great, compelling story, and I've told Bob this in the past. He's been on the show before, and I said, you know, Bob, this story grabs you at the very beginning, and it takes you on this fantastic ride, and at the end of the book, you're just emotionally and physically and mentally spent because, you know, you fall in love with these people and the lessons that Joe learns along the way. So did you take a lot of your screenwriting, you know, training or concepts and apply that to this, or was it just what was your process?
You know, first of all, I have to say thank you so much. It's so, I love hearing that. I love hearing that because, you know, there's this whole genre of business parables, and a lot of people, we had a lot of reviews, people who said something, some variation of, I don't really like parables, but I like this one.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of left-handed compliments like that. And I understand that because parables have a reputation for being kind of two-dimensional cardboard cutout figures. And to me, if a parable is just a story that is sort of a thin excuse for moralizing and lecturing and preaching about a topic, then it doesn't grab me at all, and isn't that interesting. A story has to be a story. It has to be about the real people. A parable isn't a novel. So it's not going to be 500 pages. You're not going to go into detail. You're not going to tell me what color Joe's hair is. You're not going to go into the details of his past and his parents. You can't do all that. You don't want to do all that. You want the characters to be so general and vague that anybody can relate to them. So, but that said, I mean, they got to be real people. You've got to care about them. So, I had just taken this wonderful course taught by a man named Hal Crosman in Hollywood, who is the best writing teacher I've ever had. Actually, he's the only writing teacher I've ever had.
There you go. He is the best, then.
So he is the best. He's really, really good, though. And so I had just gone through that when Bob dumped this project in my lap. I care about Joe. Melanie Matthews, whom we hardly even know about. I want to know what happened to her. And
right.
I'm curious to know about who Pindar's wife is and if they have any children. And, you know, hopefully we'll have opportunities to learn these things. But, yeah, I appreciate what you said. Thank you so much.
Well, so to kind of stay in the vein of the Go-Giver, I told Bob earlier, I said, you know, I have given away all of my Go-Giver books that I've had because I bought a bunch when I knew Bob was going to be on this ages ago. So I'm left here with my one remaining copy of the Go-Giver's Selmore, and I'm halfway through that. And I told Bob, I said, there's a reason I'm reading this book this week because I'm relearning a lot of the lessons that, quite frankly, I've kind of let become a little dull and not very attractive. And so the messages that I'm getting out of Go-Giver's Selmore, I needed to have. So thank you for writing this follow-up companion piece. Are we going to find out more in the Go-Giver Leader that's coming out in March?
You know, two things. The first is, I'll make that a cliffhanger for a moment. The first thing about the Go-Giver Selmore, it's so interesting because we sat down and write that book and kind of after it spelled, so, you know, what do these five walls really mean? We,
mm-hmm.
in the new edition of the Go-Giver, which just came out, as you probably know, it's a couple of weeks ago, the new edition of the Go-Giver is the same story, didn't change the story at all. But we have a forward and intro in the beginning. We have afterward a discussion guide and a whole 17 pages of Q&A. And in doing that discussion guide, we kind of sat down and said, so, you know, what are the – kind of asked ourselves again, what does this stuff really mean and what's really going on in this book? And it was fun because it was like discovering the book all over again. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the story that I don't know that's there. Bob doesn't know that's there. That's the nature of stories. You know, there's I don't know how it gets there, but there's stuff in there, substance in there, that the person who wrote the story doesn't even know it's there. So I'm in the middle of finishing a curriculum guide for high school teachers for the Go-Giver, because there are so many people teaching it now.
Oh, my gosh. That's exciting.
Curriculum, it is exciting, yeah. I'm totally thrilled about this. So we're going to have this out before Christmas. It'll be up on the Go-Giver website. It's a curriculum guide for high school teachers for teaching the Go-Givers a course in their class. And going through that, coming up with, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of questions to ask high school students about the text gave us a chance to once again say, like, what's in this story? It's 8 years later, and we're still finding stuff out about it. To answer your question, so the Go-Giver leader is when we came out with the book It's Not About You, which a lot of people don't know about and a lot of people don't realize is in any way connected to the Go-Giver books, but it is. It's really a sequel, basically, to the Go-Giver. And so a lot of people didn't realize that, and the title was off-putting. It's not about you. It's not about me. Why should I buy it? Very good.
Right.
So we went, our wonderful, incredible publisher, the same guy who was number 23 who said yes, Adrian Zackheim, agreed to have us, to let us retitle, revise, rewrite, and republish that book. So the Go-Giver Leader is It's Not About You, rewritten, changed ending, some of the changed laws, and it's got a new title, it's repositioned. So that's going to be that story. Will there be more? I certainly hope so, because there's more I'd like to know about these people.
Well, I hope so, too. I think this needs to be like the new Business Parable franchise that's out there. And, you know, you're number one with, you know, 40 different versions of it. So I hope you continue to do this. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting here, John, is that not only have you partnered successfully with Bob, but you are a respected author and co-author with several other people. How does writing books with all of these different powerful personalities come about? And, you know, do you have challenges working with, not with, you know, the people per se, but, you know, with maybe the different ideas or how to bring them to light?
There are kind of two, I guess I'd break the books down into two categories for me. There are books where, like books of Bob, where I'm really partnering with a person. You know, Bob and I, we feel like we're joined at the hip. Often we're not sure who wrote which words. And Brandon Webb, who's my Navy SEAL friend, and I've written now two published books with him. We have a third that's coming out, and we have a fourth that we started on. So we're doing a lot of books together. That's probably my most powerful partnership other than with Bob Berg. And feels like a real 50-50 partnership, even though I've never been a Navy SEAL myself. Then there are other books where it's really more I am writing that person's story, and they're kind of one-off books where I sort of fulfill the traditional role of a ghostwriter. I just came out with a book called I Should Be Dead, which is the memoir of Bob Beckel, this colorful television personality who grew up in an abusive home and was a flaming alcoholic and drug addict for decades and nearly killed himself 1,000 times. So writing that book was, it's kind of a cross between being a ventriloquist, a stage actor, and a trance mediumer. I have to sort of become Bob Beckel. Here's what I've, and this is going to go more to answer your question. There have been a lot of book projects that I've turned down, and it's not because, and what it is I kind of need, if I'm going to do a book project, like someone's memoir or someone's life story, I kind of need to, A, fall in love with the person in their story, and B, relate to it. There's got to be something about it that, I mean, I don't think I could write a memoir for a person that I detested, you know, who hurt puppies and,
right,
and made grandmothers cry. I don't think I could write that book. But those are fascinating. Those are kind of like again, like being a ventriloquist for the person, but I have to feel some connectedness and sort of like put on their persona. But the partnerships, like with Bob Berg, with Brandon Webb, you know, they are just phenomenal experiences because we're business partners as well as writing partners, and they're great men. I love working with them.
So do you think that any of the works that you've written, now that you did take that screenwriting course, are you going to turn any of these into maybe movies or mini-movies or TV series or anything like that?
You know, there's been the first book I wrote with Brandon, which is his life story, The Red Circle, has been optioned by CBS, and with Mark Harmon producing, they are working on a pilot right now. Yeah, so that, you know, whether the pilot will show up on television, whether it will become a series, that's anybody's guess. We'll see, but that's pretty exciting. I'm not involved in the writing of the TV show at all. I hope to, at some point, be involved in taking some of these books to screen, big screen, small screen, and be involved in the writing process itself. I figure sooner or later that Hollywood plan is going to kick in.
Well, I hope that's the case, because I'd pay my $12 to go see it, and I'd take a couple of friends. So I think that would be cool.
All right.
So, well, let's get back to the Go-Giver here, because, you know, again, I'll talk to you all day, John, and, you know, I just want to kind of focus back in, because at the end of the day, I want people to go buy the new expanded edition of the Go-Giver or any of the Go-Giver books. So, you know, take your pick, buy them all, and buy lots, because, you know, the holidays are coming up here. So, you know, you tell these great stories throughout the course of the book, and, you know, one of the things I asked Bob about was, you know, how has mentoring impacted your life, both as a mentor and mentee? Can I ask you the same question?
Yes, absolutely. So mentor and mentee both. I mean, as you've already deduced, I have had a somewhat unconventional approach to education.
I love that.
So when I was involved in starting that school, at the same time I was studying choral conducting with my dad, my father and my mother were probably my first two real educational mentors. They were both teachers, as it happened, but they both had areas of expertise that fascinated me and that I really absorbed from them. So I am just a huge believer in mentorship in terms of the way to learn something and become great at something. I think one of the most important attributes of a successful writer is the ability to take good criticism. And by good criticism, I mean criticism from somebody whose opinions you have reasons to trust, not just anybody, but then to be able to really take it and listen. The ability to work with a mentor means you really have to listen and not necessarily agree with absolutely everything they say, but to humble yourself and abase yourself and say, hey, you know something I don't know, and I'm a blank slate here. Lay it on me. I cannot tell you how many books I've thought I've finished and that they're perfect the way they are, and then somebody, an editor, an agent, a friend, or whatever, comes back and says, man, this is like, you know, this is so not ready. And it's a little bit soul-crushing, but you have to have the faith that the solution is out there. It's coming. It exists, and you're on the path toward it, even if you're not there yet. So I think that's a critical thing. I've also, done that for others in terms of writing. I love doing it.
So if we go back to the book, The Go-Giver here, there's a lot of, if you were, you know, let's say a large business, there are a lot of things that you could take back into your workplace and say, okay, we're all going to be interested in other people, and so, you know, get interested now. But how do you create a Go-Giver culture if, you know, you're like a one-man shop, or you don't have a job, or you'd like a better job and looking for work? You know, how do you kind of infuse those lessons that you have in the book into your life and you know, help improve your lot?
Yeah, I mean, I think a few thoughts come to mind. The first is simply the expression in little ways. I mean, I think that sometimes when people look at the principles in the book, The Go-Giver, and they say, how do I apply this? It's easy to get intimidated. And I think it's important not to be intimidated and to look for little ways to put other people's interests first, to create more value than you're taking payment, to find more people to touch, to expand your sphere of reach in terms of impact, law number two. Little ways. I think when people have asked me, what is a Go-Giver culture in a business look like? And for me, one thing it looks like is having the habit of going above and beyond expectation. And that's not about being a nice person or a kind person or, you know, it's not about that. It's not even about personality or character. It's almost like a work habit. And this is what Ernesto was really saying to Joe about the whole restaurant example, that a great restaurant, it strives to blow its customers' minds, to go above and beyond a level of value that no money could possibly pay for. And I think that if you look for even little ways to go above and beyond expectation, and you do that consistently, that becomes a fabric, a culture, a reputation. People come to know you for that. That is golden. That is worth more than gold. People will compensate for that sooner or later.
So why don't you think more people do that?
I think that that laziness and inertia is like a human gravity. There is a force that tends to pull us down into our couch. I just think it's kind of like entropy. It's a fact of the physical universe, and I think that that's part of it. And I think a lot of people just don't believe that more is possible, or they haven't seen enough examples that more is possible. I think that the more we can show them that, one of the reasons we're excited about the Go-Giver curriculum in high schools, the more people can see what's possible, how much you can carve extraordinariness out of your own life, no matter who you are and what you do. When people see that more, then they'll start to have reason to believe that they could do it too.
I love it. So I'm going to ask you two more questions. The first one will be, how do you stay sharp as a go-giver?
Marriage is helpful. So
okay.
Is parenthood.
Yep.
You know, the thing with marriage, and I've been married 3 times, so I'm now in my 3rd marriage. First 2 didn't work out. 3rd time was a charm. So my wife and
yay.
I both say we spent, like, you know, if it was worth 50 years to kind of learn the ropes and discover each other. So we just are so delightfully happy together. We have a wonderful life together. A lot of it is we are constantly looking for ways to serve the other person, kind of like the way Pindar talks about mm-hmm. in the book, which is very much came from both Bob's parents and my parents. But, you know, that always involves giving up stuff in a way. I mean, it's not compromise as much as or sacrifice as much as it is, you know, there's another person in your universe. And so it's a constant lesson in unattached giving. Parenthood, even more so. I highly recommend both for development of character.
I'm going to have to applaud you for that, because I'm not sure I'm at that point or I'm ready for that yet. But Jen, wrapping up, where should people connect with you on social media, and how do you prefer people to find the Go-Giver series and purchase that and your other works?
Okay, I do a little bit of Twitter and Facebook and such here and there, but not a whole lot. Primarily, I keep up my website, which is johndavidmann.com. And I have a blog through that website. I blog every Tuesday, except that I miss a lot of Tuesdays, but I do it when I can. I have a newsletter through that website letting people know about what books are coming. But I also have the full book section. So every book I've been part of is on the site, and it's always up to date. I pay a lot of attention to that site. In terms of the Go-Giver books, they are, of course, they're on my site. They are also, there is a Go-Giver site, thegogiver.com, which, by the way, we're putting a lot of energy into right now. We'll be doing a bunch of new stuff on it, a new podcast, a lot of new features to that website coming up in the new year. So that's also a good thing to look at, gogiver.com.
There we go. Everybody, it's been John David Mann. He, along with his co-author Bob Berg, have written the very successful Go-Giver series. Go out and buy the new expanded edition today, and we'll be right back after this. That right back, and then I realized when I did the soundbite for that we'll be right back. I mean, I should say that at the beginning and then come back at the end of that. So anyway, it was so much fun to have Bob and John on today. Go out and support the cause and get the Go-Giver. If I didn't believe it, I wouldn't say it, so I don't need to say, you know, oh, gee, it was a wonderful book, you should go buy it. But it honestly is a wonderful book, and if you don't laugh and cry and come away learning some valuable life lessons out of it, I would be shocked. That would be what I can tell you. So I love reading their book, Go-Givers Sell More. I'm halfway through that, and as I told both of the gentlemen today, there's a reason why they were on the show today. We booked this back at early October, so I didn't know, you know, I didn't know I was going to start reading the book Go-Giver Sell More really until like about Monday, and I said, I've got to dive back into this, and just thrilled with the reminders of the things that are taught in that book. So thanks to both Bob and John for being on the show. Real quick, a repeat of where we've been during this week and where we're going for the rest of the week. Jesse Knight was on Monday night taking listener calls. Monica and Ken from It Matters Radio. And my dog Angie sitting here having a coughing fit. Be good. You're fine. Sorry about that. Monica and Ken were with It Matters Radio on Tuesday night show. I want to have them back individually. And I'll tell you that Monica said, I'm really nervous. I've never been interviewed before. And she was great. So I want to have her tell more stories when we have her back on in the new year. But Ken and Monica were on from It Matters Radio. Their broadcast is live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. You can go to itmattersradio.com. Encourage you to do so and tell them you heard about them on the show. Rebecca took your calls last night, and then tomorrow night on the Friday Night Dance Party Live at 7 p.m. we have Rick Giannatos talking about All American Divas. It's a new CD. It's a DVD. It's a coffee table book, and it is filled with tons of fantastic information about our divas of the past, where they've been, and where they are now. It's my pleasure to have you here. I hope you follow the show. Tell all your friends to tune in 5 days a week. We're live here to serve you. If you've got an idea for a guest or a, I mean that Monday through Thursday guest, you know, like guests like today, or a musical guest for the Friday Night Dance Party, connect them with me, and I would love to get them scheduled in January and February and into March and April. That's where we're booking right now. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Don't drive distracted, and thank you for being here on Rated G Radio.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.